Well, tonight I'm going to be addressing you from Matthew chapter 28, so please turn in your Bibles to that chapter, and we're going to be looking at the last three verses there, a well-known passage about the Great Commission. Matthew 28, the last three verses. Most of us tend to get trapped in our little bubbles of life. Maybe our little bubble of our job, or the little bubble that we have of our home, or even our local church, or the local bubble of our town, or state, or even nation. But biblical missions challenges and calls us to a radically different life. It challenges and calls us to break out of our small bubbles and consider the world. Missions, the Great Commission, which we see here in Matthew 28, 18 to 20, is far from over. Christ has told us that he will not return until the gospel has reached the whole world. And we as a church must hasten the coming of Christ, as Paul tells us to, by fulfilling the Great Commission. And this commission to Jesus applies to us as a church today. The Great Commission applies to the contemporary church. Throughout history, there's been movements and people, churches that thought the Great Commission was over, and well, we don't really need to engage in missions, but that certainly is not the case. This applies directly to us as a church here in America, as a church in the world today. It applies directly to us as a local church here in Flemington today. The reason of missions is because everybody is born into this world spiritually dead in their sin and without life in Jesus Christ. That's the reason for missions. Everyone needs the gospel because they need salvation from their sin in Jesus Christ. And this task is accomplished by obeying Jesus' commission to bring the gospel to all the peoples in the world. When we fail to carry out the Great Commission, whether as individuals participating as a local church, as Christians worldwide, when we fail to carry it out, which has certainly been the case throughout church history at certain times, countless people continue to enter hell for all of eternity. The gospel of Jesus is the only remedy, and missions is the only strategy. So there's three points we're going to look at tonight in Matthew 28, 18 to 20. First is the ground of the commission. Secondly is the commission itself. And then third, the promise in the commission. So turn to Matthew 28 if you're not there already, and we'll read these last few verses, starting at verse 18. Matthew 28, verse 18. And Jesus came up and spoke to them, saying, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. So go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always, even to the end of the age." So the first point we're going to look at is the ground of the commission. We're looking at the Great Commission, and firstly, the ground of that commission, which is, as we see in verse 18, Jesus' authority. The ground of this commission is Jesus' authority. Notice, as it says here in verse 18, that it's all authority that Jesus claims. He says all authority has been given to him. Jesus is the ultimate and only authority, and all other authorities come under his authority. Notice also he says all authority in heaven and on earth. Jesus' sovereign authority comes to us on this planet, even to this building. Jesus addresses us as his people. He says, "I have all authority." That's a dramatic statement. And that's what Jesus says. He says, I have all authority. It's been given to me. And then he gives us that commission. And so consider that tonight. Jesus, as the King of the universe, he says to us today, I am the one who has all authority. It's been given to me. And I give you this commission. So since Jesus has all this authority, therefore we must obey this authoritative commission of Jesus. And therefore, all other authorities don't compete with Jesus' authority. And certainly, we're looking tonight at the Great Commission, but any other area of our Christian lives, Jesus' authority is above all of that. And when any other authorities come underneath that and try to compete with Jesus' authority, we have to ignore that and always submit to the ultimate authority, which is Jesus himself. Not to actively participate in accomplishing the Great Commission is not to submit to Jesus' authority. And certainly, there, when Jesus says, all authority is given to me, that applies to all of his people. You know, sometimes we tend to think, well, the Great Commission is just for the ministers or the missionaries. And that's certainly not the case. And it's certainly not the case that it just applies to the apostles. But this commission that Jesus gives to us applies to all of his people, to the whole church. Notice also here in verse 18, Jesus says that all authority has been given to him. This authority has been given to Jesus. Who gave it to him? The Father. The Father has given Jesus all authority. God the Father has given all authority to his Son, Jesus Christ. And it is with this authority that Jesus, in turn, gives his disciples this commission. It is because of this authority that we must obey this commission. And it is by this authority that we accomplish this commission. Since the Father has given his Son this authority, then God expects and demands us to submit and obey his Son, particularly in regard to this commission. So you see what I'm saying? Since God has given all authority to Christ, and Christ in turn has told us with his authority this great commission, then we are certainly responsible and required to obey this commission by Jesus Christ our Lord. So that's the first point quickly, the ground of the commission, which is Jesus' authority. Secondly, the commission itself, which can be summarized in Jesus' words as make disciples. That's the primary focus of the commission. Jesus is saying, in summary, make disciples. That's the commission. But there's certainly other parts to this commission, and certainly other parts that are added to making disciples. And we see that here in our text, verse 19. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations. The beginning of verse 19 starts with therefore. In other words, the ground of the Father giving all authority to his Son, and in turn the Son commissioning his church, we in turn are to obey and go make more disciples for Jesus. That's what we see here in verse 19. Go therefore. All authority has been given to Jesus. The Father has given him this authority. So go and make disciples. Without going, as we see here in verse 19, we can't make disciples of Jesus Christ. Now, certainly there's a lot involved in going. You know, what does it mean to go? Well, simply, we could say that going is simply to be active and to do what Jesus has required of us. Sometimes we think of the Great Commission as going overseas. That's not necessarily the case. Going also requires self-denial and surrender. For us to obey Jesus' commission to us and him telling us to go, to make disciples, it requires of us to deny ourselves and to surrender our lives to him and say, okay, you've required of us to do these things, therefore we need to submit and surrender ourselves to you. And going usually requires leaving something. Jesus says here to his disciples, go and make disciples. Certainly, to some degree, he's requiring of them to leave something behind. And that's certainly the case for us as well. When Jesus tells us as individual Christians, when he tells us as a church, to make disciples, to go and make disciples, to a large degree for us, that requires us to leave someone or something behind. And the question we need to ask ourselves is, are we willing to leave behind what we need to in order to obey what Jesus has commanded us here? Consider Jesus, who went on his mission to save his people. He went, right? He left heaven. He went to accomplish his mission. He fulfilled his mission by going. Therefore, as his people, let us go on a mission to make more disciples for him. So, though most of us in this room probably won't go to a foreign nation, yet Jesus nonetheless requires all of us to go and be active to some degree. Now, I want to challenge you in that regard tonight. That as you hear Jesus' words to us tonight from Matthew 28 about the Great Commission, that you would consider yourself individually to go and make disciples. Whether that's going and talking to family or friends or coworkers, but to go and to be active. To make it your resolve and your purpose, I'm going to go and do this. I'm going to get up and do this and to obey Jesus' commission. If we just sit back and don't consider this going, we're not going to accomplish anything. We must consider what Jesus says. He says, go and make disciples. Disciples aren't made by themselves. They require us to go and to be active and to engage in that. But next, under our second point here, go and do what? Well, Jesus says, go and make disciples, as I've highlighted already. This word, make disciples, is the focus of Jesus' commission. The main task of present disciples is to make more disciples. Is this your focus? And this certainly needs to be the focus of our church. For those of us who are present disciples, in other words, for those of us who are Christians today, it's our responsibility, it's our task, it's what Jesus is telling us here, to go and make more disciples. So for those of us who are Christians, we should desire other people to become Christians as well. That's what Jesus is saying here. That's the focus, as I said here, in the commission itself, to make disciples. And those who make disciples are those who are already disciples. And so that needs to be your focus as an individual Christian, for those of us who are Christians here. To make disciples. As a Christian, that should be our desire. And that's Jesus' desire here for us in our text. Think of this question, still under our second point. Why does Jesus command his present disciples to make more disciples? Why does he tell us to do that? You know, why does he put part of the burden and responsibility upon you and me as Christians? Well, let me give you a few reasons here. First of all, because salvation is for everybody. Jesus freely offers salvation to the world, to all those who would come to him. And it's our responsibility to get the gospel to the world, to all people. Because Christ has died and risen in order to save and sanctify his chosen people throughout the world. Now, God, we certainly believe God has elected his people, and yet God doesn't just somehow zap people into salvation. But he has died and is risen to save his people, to sanctify his people, and we participate in that. Why has Jesus commanded his present disciples to make more disciples? Well, because Christ has saved his people from their sin in order that we would live for him and not ourselves, that we would be his servants and his workers. So once God saves you and you become a Christian, he expects you, he calls you to be active to make more disciples. Someone who has no concern, I remember Spurgeon said this, I'm paraphrasing to some degree, but Spurgeon said, if you have no desire for the salvation of others, then make certain that you're not saved yourself. So you see, God saves us from our sin in order that we wouldn't live for ourselves, but we would live for him and serve him. And certainly part of serving him is going to make more disciples. So ask yourself, do I have a desire to make more disciples? Do I want to make more disciples? Do I want other people to come to Christ? Other people to be saved from their sin? Or do we get caught up in everything else that thinking, that lifestyle is just not part of us. It's not in our thinking. And why does Jesus command his present disciples to make more disciples? Well, because God uses means to save his people. and to make disciples. And his means is using his present disciples. God uses you and me to make more disciples. I touched on that already. But God isn't going to save anyone without us. Because we're responsible to make more disciples. We're responsible to spread the gospel. And the well-known passage in Romans that those who haven't heard, how are they going to hear unless we go and speak the word to them? So God uses means. So the commission is to go make disciples, and he uses us to do that. So we're in no position to tell God, well, I don't want to participate in this commission. We're in no position not to submit to his authority. We're in no position not to participate in this great commission of making disciples. God requires us to as his disciples, and we're supposed to as Christians. Still under our second point, let me move on to another section. Where are we to make more disciples? Well, Jesus says here, look at verse 19 still, go and make disciples of every nation. William Mounts, some of you may have heard of him, he says this, quote, in relation to every nation, he says, quote, the term has significance for the church's mission because of its appearance in the Great Commission. In this text, Jesus' command is not to disciple every, quote unquote, nation in the sense of geopolitical states, but in the sense of every single people group in the world, unquote. So what Jesus is saying here isn't, when he says go make disciples of every nation, he isn't saying, okay, go to the United States of America, go to Egypt, go to Germany. That's not what he's saying about the geopolitical states, the way we think of nations. But what Jesus is referring to is the peoples of the world, the people groups of the world. Christ did not die for the sins of only one people group. Jesus didn't die just for Americans or just for Mexicans or just for a certain type of people, not just the Jews. But Jesus died for all people groups, for all peoples. He died for his elect in all the world, as we read in Revelation. So it is our duty, therefore, to get the gospel to every people group that has still not heard of it, because Christ has died for people in that people group. And it's our responsibility to bring the gospel to them. You know, certainly there's many people groups, many groups of peoples, languages, where the gospel hasn't been. And we can't just say, sit back and have a prayer meeting about it and say, Lord, save the people. He's not going to do it that way. God's going to save his people by the word being preached to those people. The focus of the contemporary church ought to be on the people groups in this world that have still not had the gospel preached to them and to get the gospel to them. Now, certainly, you know, I hear people say this all the time, well, everybody needs the gospel. And certainly that's the case. Everybody needs to be saved. You know, the neighbor right next to us, they need to be saved. The people on this block need to be saved. But the focus has to be, at least in regard to the Great Commission, in regards to missions, is getting the gospel to those who haven't been reached. There are many areas and peoples in this world where the gospel has already reached. Flemington is a perfect example. The gospel has reached us. And America is a perfect example. There's many places where the gospel has reached. But consider this also. There's many areas and peoples where the gospel has never reached. So everyone knows that. There's places where the gospel's reached. There's places where the gospel hasn't reached. So the church's mission, at least when it's related to the Great Commission, the church's mission today is to reach those areas and peoples where the gospel has still not reached. That's the Great Commission, to go and make disciples of all peoples. Now let's move to our third point, the promise of the commission. Look at verse 20. Now I skipped over some parts in this text here, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. We skip that, and then it says, teaching them to observe all that I've commanded you. We're not going to address that tonight. But then Jesus says, and behold, I'm with you always, even to the end of the age. That's the promise of this commission. So we've seen already the authority, Jesus' authority. He says, I have all authority, so go and do something. Now he says, I'm going to give you a promise with that as well. And the promise is his presence. He says, I'm going to be with you to accomplish this commission. Notice, obviously, who is making the promise. It's Jesus himself. Jesus tells us, I'm going to be with you. But notice the context of this promise. Jesus doesn't say, I'll be with you in whatever you do. But the context here is, I'll be with you as you carry out this great commission, as you actively participate in missions. I'll be with you to do that, to accomplish that. Jesus isn't saying here, I'll be with you when you go and seek to build your own life and do whatever you want. That's certainly not the context here. But I'll be with you as you carry out this great commission. So if Jesus is the one making this promise to his people, he's going to keep it. And we must be comforted and emboldened to carry out his commission to us to bring the gospel to all the peoples of this world. If Jesus, since he has, promised to be with us, that should give us comfort. That should embolden us to do the great commission, to carry it out. Because he says, I'm going to be with you to make sure you carry it out. And that should give us a lot of comfort, and that should embolden us to do it. Now, if Jesus didn't give us that promise, if we didn't think Jesus was with us, you know, we could strategize all day and have prayer meetings and talk about, well, how are we going to do this? And we would probably be disappointed. And we would have no assurance of accomplishing anything. But Jesus said, I'm going to be with you to do this. And that should give us a lot of comfort. That should embolden us to do it. Specifically, what is the promise? Well, Jesus says, I'll be with you. Jesus is promising his very presence. Jesus has promised that he will be with his people as we go and make disciples of every people group. He'll be with us. Remember what Jesus said to Paul in the book of Acts when he's in Ephesus and Paul's all discouraged and worried. And at night, Jesus comes and talks to him. He says, don't be afraid. I'll be with you because I have many people in the city. And that's the exact promise that Jesus gives to his people today. I'll be with you as you go and carry out the Great Commission. The reason missions will succeed when we follow the biblical method is because Jesus himself is with us to accomplish it. See, because Jesus himself is actually accomplishing it through us. It's not us doing it. The church of Jesus will be built because Jesus is with us when we go with his gospel to every people group in the world. That's why it's going to be built. That's why Jesus said, I will build my church because he's accomplishing it. Now, we could say, and certainly many people have, well, you know, I don't really want to participate in the Great Commission. Okay, certainly many people have said that. And Jesus is going to get the work done without you or without me. But certainly to participate in it is a great privilege, and to be a co-worker of Jesus Christ. So he's going to accomplish it one way or the other. He's going to build his church one way or the other. He's going to save his elect one way or the other, with or without us. And he's called us in the Great Commission, whether it's locally or throughout the world, he's called us to participate in it and to accomplish it. And if he doesn't use me, he'll use the next person. And if he doesn't use you, he'll use the next person, because he will accomplish it. But the promise here is that he'll be with us to accomplish it. And then finally, notice here, how long is the promise for? It says here, depending on your translation, that he'll be with us always till the end of the age. So he's saying two things here. There's two parts. He's saying always, I'll be with you always, and I'll be with you always to the end of the age. No matter where we go, or when we go, or who goes, Jesus has promised that he will be with us always. That's a great promise. So when you seek to make disciples, or to participate in the Great Commission, Jesus promises to always be with you. Now, again, remember the context. He's saying, I'll be with you in relating to the Great Commission, in relating to carrying out this commission for us, for him. The promise gives us hope and assurance that missions will succeed because Jesus will always be with us to do the work himself. And there's never a day in history or church history where, you know, Jesus has taken a nap and not building his church. He is always with his people. He's always accomplishing his task and always building his church. So why would we not go and accomplish the Great Commission if Jesus has promised to be with us always? Now, what reason could we give? Jesus says, I'll be with you as a local church. I'll be with you as an individual. I'll be with my church corporately. What reason would we have not to do it? The promise is not just for the apostles' generation. See, we could read this and say, well, you know, he promised it to his disciples. I'll be with you, Peter and John and all the other disciples and apostles. But that's not the case. And it's certainly not the case that this promise is just for maybe some past generations. You know, we know of great missionaries and great evangelists and great preachers throughout church history. Well, yet Jesus was with them. You know, he was certainly with Whitfield. You know, well, is he with us today? Yes, he is. This promise is to our generation. Jesus says, I'll be with our generation, with us. Sometimes we don't think that way. We think back in church history, we see all these great works, all these great things God has done. Well, he was with them. But he's with us today. And we should be encouraged by that to fulfill this great commission. But then he also says, I'll be with you always, even to the end of the age. Jesus will never leave his people in our carrying out of his commission. He'll never leave us. He will continually be with us in our task of making disciples for him till he returns for us in the second coming at the end of this age. Since Jesus has promised his presence to his people till the consummation of the age, that means he expects and commands us to fulfill this commission until he returns. So he expects us to be actively participating. Every one of us as Christians to be actively participating in this great commission until he returns. That's why he says here, I'll be with you till the end of this age. In other words, what he's saying is, I expect you to do this till I come back, and I'm going to be with you till I come back. That's why I said earlier that the Great Commission isn't over. It's never been over until Jesus returns. So let us be faithful to actively and self-sacrificially participate in the carrying out of Jesus' Great Commission to us, to bring the gospel to all the peoples of this world till this age is over and Jesus returns. So let me mention a few things now in conclusion. I listened to a sermon by John Piper more than once. It's titled Everlasting Truth for the Joy of All Peoples. And what I want you to do, this is an assignment for you. What I want you to do is I want you to go to desiringgod.org. That's his church website. And type in the top right-hand box where you can do the search, Everlasting Truth for the Joy of All Peoples. So if you can't remember that, just write that down. If you forget, send me a text during the week. John Piper's sermon, Everlasting Truth for the Joy of All Peoples. He certainly did a better job than I did tonight. It's an excellent sermon on missions. It's probably one of the best sermons I've ever heard on missions and encouraging us and challenging us to participate in missions. The church's mission, you may have heard this, is missions. Now, certainly there's many things involved in being a Christian and being a local church. Certainly there's many parts of that, many legitimate parts. But our mission is missions. Therefore, the focus of our time, our money, our efforts ought to be on making more disciples of the peoples of this world. To some degree, if you're not going to go to participate with those that do, may we not focus on ourselves and this fading world. Turn your eyes upon Jesus and to the people groups in this world who need him and who have never yet heard of him. Lift up your eyes to the white harvest and obey Jesus' commission to his church to make disciples of every people group in this world. See, we have to have the right perspective. That's what a lot of this comes down to. And and I've mentioned this a number of times, especially here in America, the way that we live, the way that we think, we get distracted of having the right perspective on life. You know, the right perspective challenges us, as I mentioned earlier, to consider the world, to consider the fact that without the gospel, people continue day after day to fall into hell. See, it's about the right perspective. And when we have the right perspective on life, about reality, about the scriptures, about the gospel, about God's church, then we should certainly engage in these things. We have to have the right perspective. So I want to challenge you in that. Not to get caught up in the mundane, normal things of life, many of them legitimate. But to pray that God would give you a right perspective on these issues, and certainly the issue of the Great Commission. And to consider the peoples of this world who have never heard. Now, when was the last time you sat back or I sat back and we thought about the privilege we have because we actually have the gospel? You know, we don't think of that. And that's just the bottom line. We don't think of that usually. Very seldom. And yet the majority of this world in 2012, the majority probably, now I certainly don't know the exact statistic, but probably the majority of humans, individual humans in this world, haven't had the gospel. And that should really cause us to think and have the right perspective. We have the gospel. That's the greatest privilege in this world. The fact that we can come to Flemington in 2012 and we have the gospel, that God has saved us, when the majority of the people in this world don't have a Bible, don't have a church, and have never had the gospel ever preached to them. Certainly the true gospel. Let me give you an illustration. I think Paul Washer was the first to give this illustration. Maybe he got it from someone else. But this might help you put it into perspective a little better. An illustration here. And regarding to the Great Commission, to missions. Either climb down into the well yourself or hold the rope for those who do. Either way, you will have marks on your hands from holding the rope. I love that illustration. That's the Great Commission. And the truth is, even as you look through the scriptures, Paul, Timothy, a few participated actively in the Great Commission. Only a few actually go down into the well themselves. But for those who don't actually go down into the well themselves holding the rope, then we should hold the rope for those who do. Either way, we should have rope burns on our hands to prove and to show I'm actively participating in the work of the Great Commission. So I hope that challenges you and gives you a good perspective about the Great Commission and participating in worldwide missions. Jesus is worth it. I've said that a number of times, even these past few weeks. Jesus is worth it. And Jesus is worth serving. And Jesus is worth giving everything up for. He's worth making disciples for, because with his blood, he has accomplished his mission to purchase his church out of every people group in this world. He accomplished his mission to save us, and then he calls us in turn to go and make more disciples for him. Revelation 5:9, a verse we've read a number of times in our call to worship, that he has his people out of every language, every nation, every people group. He has his people. Think of that. And I've heard missionaries say, you know, as they go to an unreached people, they have great confidence because they know Jesus has died for some of those people. That's a great confidence, knowing that Jesus has died for people in all places. He has his elect in all places. And finally, every individual Christian in every local church must be deeply active in carrying out Jesus' Great Commission, to bring his gospel to all peoples. And Jesus won't return until we've completed this task. So to a large degree, we could say, you know, we, certainly God's sovereign. Certainly God controls all things. But his return, to a large degree, depends on whether we accomplish or fail to accomplish the Great Commission. Let's pray.